Hey everyone, this is Evelyn Barnhart coming to you today with a discussion on the way the media portrays eating disorders and why we need to erase the stigma behind them. So many people in our culture deal with all kinds of subthreshold eating disorders, but don't get the help that they need because they don't meet the general criteria of a full-blown eating disorder. The media portrays eating disorders as having an extreme, noticeable effect on those who suffer from them, and while eating disorders do have an extreme effect on many, a large part of the population deals with the same eating disorders at unnoticeable levels. A huge number of people battle anorexia, bulimia, orthorexia, and so many other food-related disorders and never get help. Eating disorders are serious, but we never seem to hear about them in the media. So first off, we need to know what eating disorders really are, why people develop them, and what causes them. Eating disorders result from obsessive destructive thoughts that turn into obsessive destructive behaviors, often stemming from media-created social stigmas about beauty and acceptance. Eating disorders become the driving force behind every decision of those affected by them, invading the mind and permanently changing the victim's view of themselves. If left unaddressed long enough, these obsessive behaviors will take over the mind and cause permanent mental and physical damage. It's important that we get rid of the idea that eating disorders only affect teen girls. While teen girls make up the majority of those who have eating disorders, they are certainly not the only ones who develop them. Eating disorders affect people of all backgrounds and body weights, and they certainly affect both genders. As said earlier, the media likes to use deathly thin teen girls to portray eating disorders. While this image is an accurate representation of extreme, full-blown disorders, it leaves out those who show no symptoms and suffer in silence. An eating disorder is simply that, disordered eating. Not everyone who has an eating disorder shows symptoms, at least not immediately. The physical danger of a full-blown eating disorder is extremely serious, don't get me wrong. But what many fail to understand is that the mental repercussions of disordered eating are equally as dangerous. Subthreshold eating disorders, or those that don't show as many symptoms, are still mentally and physically damaging. Many people who fall into the trap of disordered eating make a full physical recovery, but a much smaller percentage makes a full mental recovery. And the reason for this is that 100% of eating disorders start with a mental stimulus. There is no single reason a person develops an eating disorder, but nearly all these disorders stem from the idea that the person isn't good enough the way that they are and needs to make a physical change. One of the main reasons people fall into this trap can be linked to unrealistic beauty standards set by, you guessed it, the media. At least one point in our lives, all of us have looked at a picture of a model and thought, I wish I could look like that. The media paints a picture of what the, quote, ideal man or woman should look like, and some are more affected by the representation than others. What separates those who have disordered eating from those who don't is that disordered eaters go to extremes to try to look like the model, while normal eaters give no further thought to it and move on with their day. Disordered eaters internalize unrealistic images of what they, quote, should look like, while normal people give said images nothing more than a passing glance. The mental aspect of eating disorders is often the toughest barrier to get past, even when a person is physically healing. The mind put the person there to begin with, and it can put the person right back where they were with no coaxing. Issues of the mind must be dealt with in order for full recovery to take place, and even then, most people with serious and subthreshold eating disorders will never fully recover. As many recovered disordered eaters experience, the mind will always be at war with itself. One aspect of eating disorders that most people don't realize is that not everyone who has an eating disorder knows that they have one. Since eating disorders start with obsessive thoughts about body image, most people who are in the grips of disordered eating don't see themselves any differently from anyone else, only that there is a problem with themselves that they need to change. the desire to be thinner, fitter, and overall better looking are the driving forces behind these people's extreme diets and ridiculous exercise plans. To them, their behaviors are no different than your average person trying to get back in shape. My story was no different. My obsessive exercise and eating habits started my sophomore year of high school and ended my first semester of college. My disorders started the same way as everyone else's do, with an unhealthy self-image and unrealistic expectations. Even though I was thin in high school, I was unhappy with the way that I looked and wanted badly to change. This, to me, meant losing weight, and losing weight meant exercising more and eating less. I was a cross-country runner in high school, so I used training as an excuse to run a ridiculous number of miles, averaging 5 to 7 miles a day. In addition to running, I would do bodyweight workout sets for the sole purpose of burning more calories. When exercising didn't yield the results that I wanted, my obsession spilled over to food, and that's where things took a turn for the worse. I spiraled into an eating habit that was both restrictive and obsessively healthy, all in the name of losing weight. When asked about my strict diet, I hid the real reason under, "I'm just trying to be the healthiest person I can be." I convinced those around me that my efforts were all in the name of athleticism, and I eventually succeeded in convincing myself. Through this process, I developed sub-threshold anorexia and showed signs of orthorexia, an obsessive disease order that is characterized by obsessing over an extremely healthy diet. I slowly began to drop weight and reached my lowest recorded weight in my junior year of high school, weighing in at 117 pounds with an underweight BMI of 18.3. In the spring of that same year, my body began to break down. Due to my calorie restriction, I developed a tibial stress fracture and my menstrual cycles stopped. My body was starting to take measures to keep itself from breaking down, and this became more and more evident as I continued with those obsessive behaviors. My eating disorder met its end in the first semester of my freshman year of college, but the obsessive thoughts still remain. I tell my story not to gain sympathy, but to shed light on those who deal with subthreshold eating disorders. Though my eating disorder was not life-threatening by any means, it was still a serious condition that affected my mind, my body, and everything about my life. Those who suffer from subthreshold eating disorders often don't get the help that they need because they don't meet the media-created stigma that everyone who suffers from an eating disorder is in critical condition. The media has pushed the idea that people don't have eating disorders until they are showing severe physical signs, but an eating disorder must begin somewhere. Severe physical problems show that a person has suffered from an eating disorder for a long period of time. This means that the person was suffering from the same eating disorder long before they showed signs of it. Thus, they had an eating disorder but still appeared to be healthy. This is true for many, many people in our culture. Too many people with subthreshold eating disorders think that they're not sick enough, even though they are suffering so much. Turned down by doctors and insurance companies for not meeting the eating disorder treatment criteria, these people receive no treatment and are left to struggle with their disorder alone. Emily Murray, a writer for The Mighty, which is a digital health community created to empower and connect people facing health challenges and disabilities, shares her testimony of what it is like to have subthreshold anorexia. She tells the following story. When I first began to diet, it started as an innocent attempt to consume more fruits and veggies and exercise a little more. No big deal. The first 6 months of my diet, I didn't lose any weight. The situation seemed pretty normal to me. However, after those 6 months, I began to wonder why I hadn't lost any weight and why all of my hard work was going to waste. I decided to cut back on calories in certain food groups in order to lose weight. I also increased my physical activity, working out twice a day. I began to lose some weight and usually went to bed hungry. I stopped having my period and began getting compliments on how good my body looked. The compliments of weight loss motivated me to work harder and harder and lose as much weight as I could. Some of my close family questioned my workout habits and diet, but I quickly wrote them off, labeling them as overdramatic. This was the beginning of my experience with almost anorexia. I went online to check out the diagnostic criteria for anorexia nervosa, just to be sure I was doing okay. I did stop having my menstrual cycle. However, I hadn't lost too much weight yet, or so I thought. I did occasionally binge eat, but I didn't attribute that to calorie restriction. I was convinced I lacked self-control, and binging was just a moment of weakness. I didn't meet criteria for an eating disorder. Phew! I told myself I was good and didn't need any help, even though my mind was slowly being taken over by an obsession with calorie counting, food restriction, and excessive compulsive exercise. A year went by, I still didn't have my period, and by that time I had lost a significant amount of weight. My mom and I decided to seek out the advice of a registered dietitian nutritionist to make sure I was still doing okay. I shared with the registered dietitian nutritionist that I thought that I may have a problem with eating. This was a big step for me to admit that I thought I had almost anorexia. However, the dietitian quickly dismissed my concerns and told me I was at a normal weight and that I didn't binge or restrict enough to have an eating disorder. This terrible, horrible advice only fueled the fire for my eating disorder, giving me permission to restrict and exercise even more so than I was already doing. By the time I sought treatment for my eating disorder, I did meet criteria for anorexia, which made my road to recovery even more difficult than if I had sought help when I first began showing warning signs and symptoms of disordered eating. However, I was still considered to be at a normal weight for my height during most of my recovery, and I looked very much normal to individuals who didn't know how I previously looked before my eating disorder. There was no one in my life, myself included, that was educated enough to recognize my almost eating disorder for what it was, which is why I'm so adamant about sharing my story. Emily is similar to many who deal with subthreshold eating disorders. Though each person's story is unique, her story is a good representation of what life with subthreshold eating disorders is like. As discussed in part earlier, a major contributor to eating disorders is the media. Media outlets have formulated a picture of the perfect body type and promote it everywhere. The media has created a social pressure toward, quote, looking good that is unattainable. Eating disorders develop from the desire to change oneself, and much of this desire can be traced directly back to the media. Magnolia Creek Center for Eating Disorders says that, according to the National Eating Disorder Association, a recent study of women between the ages of 18 and 25 showed a link between Instagram and increased self-objectification and body image concerns, especially among those who frequently viewed Fitspiration images. Americans spend around 2 hours a day on social media potentially exposed to unrealistic ideals of beauty, diet talk, body shaming, Fitspiration, weight loss posts, and more. Another study of social media users showed that higher Instagram usage was associated with a greater prevalence of orthorexia nervosa symptoms, highlighting the influence social media has on psychological well-being. The site goes on to say that pictures on social media, many of which are altered, play a role in how one seeks validation, often finding our worth by how many likes and comments we receive. Selfies on social media can potentially send an image that our beauty determines our worth and our body, a message of which many with an eating disorder struggle. This said, the media certainly plays a role in the large number of eating disorders in our culture. With this episode, I hope to bring awareness to eating disorders and break the stereotypes that most people hold about them. Many more people than we realize struggle with eating disorders of all kinds, and it is time our culture recognizes this. Eating disorders affect many people in our culture, and subthreshold disorders affect so many more. Our culture is partially to blame for this, so it is our social responsibility to learn how to quell it. We need to challenge beauty standards in both men and women and redefine what it means to, quote, look good. In addition to this, we need to challenge the stigma behind eating disorders and become more supportive of those who may be dealing with them. Eating disorders are hard to beat, and the goal to end them is distant, but we can take the steps to reach it.